All right, everybody. So I've had a lot of people reach out to me, giving me a lot of support for signing the People in Tech podcast. And I want to really first say thank you for supporting me. But this Anchor platform has been amazing and been changing my life, getting me connected with some people in this industry that I never thought I would actually get to not only have conversations with, but learn from. And I know some of you who are tuning in are asking, Caleb, how did you start a podcast? You know, when I was trying to get this podcast off the ground, I had a lot of questions. How do I record an episode? How do I get my show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all the other places people listen to? How do I make money from my podcast? Well, keep it simple. The answer to every one of these questions is Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. Best of all, it's 100% free. And we ridiculously easy to use. My very first episode I did for my iPhone 6 Plus. And now, Anchor can match you with great sponsors too. So you can get paid to do your own podcast. Hop on the Anchor platform so we can collaborate and build this community up. You know, one thing I love most about Anchor is that they're constantly being innovative, you know, allowing podcasts to leverage music, get sponsorship, get paid, and ultimately be the best content creator you can be. So if you've always wanted to start your podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start to join me and a diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. Again, that's anchor.fm/start. I can't wait to hear your podcast.
Have you ever felt?
Are you listening? Damn.
What's up, everybody? Yeah. Welcome back to the People in Tech podcast. I'm your host, Caleb King, and today's episode is a very special episode because I get to interview the lovely, smart, successful woman of the year, entrepreneur of the year, Heidi Janenga, co-founder and president of WebPT. And this episode is dedicated to all the WebPTers out there. Without you guys, this podcast wouldn't exist. Without any of you, I wouldn't be where I am personally and professionally, from friends to mentors to everything in between. I'm really going to miss working with you guys, and I hope you enjoy today's episode. Let's get into it.
Ladies and gentlemen, are you ready?
Hi, Heidi. Well, thank you for being on the People in Tech podcast. We're happy to have you. And as you know, I provided a list of questions, but we're going to use those questions more as a guideline. Really just want to have more of a conversation, but let's just jump into it. How did you get into tech?
Well, I actually got into tech by happenstance, out of necessity. I actually am a physical therapist. I've been practicing for over 15 years and had a problem that was in my practice at the time with high cost of transcription and dictation. And so we looked at potential software opportunities to solve that problem, and there really wasn't any. And so we decided that we would build something ourselves. So I just happened to be dating a software engineer at the time, and we put our heads together and built something that originally was just supposed to be for my practice.
Okay.
And then we did a little market research and we found that 80% of physical therapists were still using pen and paper back in 2007.
Right.
And so my sort of step into tech was really out of realizing there was a problem, noticing that it was actually a more systemic problem than I even thought in the very beginning. And taking that leap of faith into recognizing that we had stumbled onto something that actually could really disrupt how the physical therapy profession and physical therapists all over this country could really do better at documentation and keeping up with compliance, their compliance efforts in their clinics.
Okay. So it sounds like you were saying, you were a physical therapist, you were doing something yourself, pen and paper,
mm-hmm.
and then luckily you found an engineer who can actually build something. So did you feel you were pretty much like a product owner? Like, was he building it and coming to you? Like, this is what you want? Like, what was that process like?
Exactly. I was the product manager, product owner, subject matter expert.
Okay.
So we developed this sort of routine in which we came up with sort of the template of what of how a physical therapist operates. Brad Janenga, came in and was actually followed and shadowed us around in the practice.
Okay.
Sat at the front office, in the front office to understand what was the workflow when the patient came in as well. And so having that understanding on both the software engineer side, as well as then me coming in as the product owner, subject matter expert, and creating the template of this is what happens first. This is where we need to, these are the pieces of information that need to be collected. We created this sort of spreadsheet that, you know, basically was a decision tree. And then Brad would then code that, you know, when we had the cycle, then the next day I would come in and I would QA what he had built. And so we had this sort of rhythmic cycle that we did for, it was about 9 months until we had version one, which looks very different than what we have today as the full platform 10 years later.
Sure.
But, you know, we had the demographic section, and we had a documentation section, which you could choose different templates for the therapist to document on.
Okay.
For different body parts.
Okay. So at what point, maybe for our listeners, so they have an understanding,
mm-hmm.
was this something where you're like, I have gold, I'm going to quit my job and 100% dedicate to building this thing? Or was it a side project that evolved? Like, what was that process like?
Yeah, so I am not the big risk taker entrepreneur person.
Okay.
I am a calculated risk taker. Brad is much more jump in. He had just exited from selling some e-commerce platform sites that he had built.
Okay.
And so he had some money set aside. I continued to work full time.
Okay.
Actually through the first 4 years of the company. So even from through the 2 years of build, and then once we launched the company in 2008, even through those first 2 years of startup mode, I continued to work full time. So it was definitely not a side project, but it was really like working two full-time jobs at that point.
Okay. So the name of your company now, WebPT, correct? So what is your role now with WebPT 10 years later?
So it's been an evolution over the 10 years, but I am still intimately involved with our product management team.
Okay.
As, again, one of the subject matter experts, we now have many of them, including, you know, our 14,000 members that are using our platform and hitting it every day. We
Congratulations.
Have well, thank you. We have, well, actually, I should say the clinics, because we have over 85,000 users. It's a big difference there.
Mm-hmm.
But we have a lot of advisory groups and things like that that also help our product team. But I'm intimately involved in the forward-looking phase of what's that next thing that we should be building and looking at in terms of technology or features that we need to have within the platform. So that's one part of my role. The second part is I lead the culture here within our organization at WebPT. Culture has been part of our sort of foundation from the very beginning. You know, we had a very strong, every company has a strong individual culture, but
right.
we've intentionally put a lot of effort and even dollars towards, you know, continuing to promote that culture. And we really believe that it's part, an intimate part of our success. And so I lead sort of the culture aspect of the people within our organization. And then the third part of my role is the face of the company. So I work really closely with our marketing team, do a lot of PR for the organization, do a lot of speaking engagements to not only promote our organization, but a lot of the great, you know, things that we're doing within the community. So we are located in the downtown warehouse district,
mm-hmm.
Which we were one of the very first companies to plant our flag down here back in 2010.
Okay.
With the understanding that, wow, this is really cool. They have really cool spaces down here. You can create great creative, collaborative, you know, environments for tech teams to work in.
Mm-hmm.
And so since then, there's now multiple companies down here. It's really transformed significantly in the last 5-8 years.
Right.
Since we've been down here. So that's been really fun.
Awesome. So you touched on a few different things. So one thing I'm kind of curious about, so this happened 2008.
Mm-hmm.
A historic crash happened in America. Economy wasn't in the best spot. You know, did that affect you at all when you're going through, hey, like, we have a great idea, let's pursue it? Like, what was that thought process like?
Well, you know, one great thing about being in healthcare during that time is healthcare was super, everyone needs healthcare, right? And so that was fairly unaffected by the stock market crash and the real estate crash and all of that. Arizona was one of the hardest hit in terms of real estate, and it's, you know, was one of the biggest economic drivers in our state. So a lot of people were out of work. So it actually worked to our benefit during that time when we were hiring.
Okay.
We found space cheap. Our very first space was literally the storeroom of a coffee shop, but we quickly outgrew that after we launched the company. We had one employee when we started.
Okay.
And quickly needed to hire more folks. And so our next stop was in an architectural firm that we actually subletted space, because you can imagine they weren't getting a lot of work, so they had space to offer up. So we took advantage of that.
And
then, you know, you had people that needed to find work. Our very first employee actually was very entrepreneurial minded, and he had started a landscape business. Well, people weren't willing to pay for landscaping as much, right? So he needed to find something else, and we were lucky enough to bring him on board as our first employee in sales.
Awesome.
And so little things like that, like opportunities that, you know, came up of these entrepreneurial minded folks that we needed, right time, right place. Part of the success of any any company that has success, there's lucky moments, right? There's stars aligned in certain areas,
mm-hmm.
That kind of have to happen to really get to that end point. And we had a lot of those events happening during that time.
Right. So again, you spoke on a lot of great things. And one thing I kind of want to bring it back, when you're talking about culture, this is for our listeners, because
mm-hmm.
I've heard WebPT has won a lot of different awards, top place of work, top startup, and, you know, everything in between. You know, culture, can you just describe, maybe from a high level, like, what's the difference between, like, a WebPT culture and, you know, the cubicle shop down the street?
Yeah, every company has a culture, and it's really truly how you define it. Our culture is defined by, you know, and if you define culture in general, it's really how you do things in your business,
okay.
Right? The core values that you sort of are the expectations within the organization for every person that walks in, from the top person to the entry-level person, right? And we've always had sort of this foundation of a people-first mindset, and providing an amazing environment for you to be an individual, and also bring your A game every day, but love coming to work.
Right.
Right? That it's not, and being a place where you not only, it's not just about having a job, that you're finding a career here at WebPT, right? So we, you know, the cliche of you work really hard, but we like to play hard too, really pertains very well to WebPT. Like, it's kind of epitomizes what we like to do.
Right.
You know, we have an alcohol policy. We have profanity in our core values. You know, these little things that sort of just make up who you are. And it's not necessarily that it's any better than that widget shop down the street. They may have a very different culture, but that works for them,
right?
But we know that it's part of our success because we have such a strong retention rate of our employees. So we, you know, tout close to 90% retention rate of our employees over time.
Okay.
And that's something that, you know, we're really proud of. We love listening to our folks. We give our teams a lot of opportunity to give us feedback, and we really listen to them and implement changes as we get that feedback. So we use the EMPS, the Employee Net Promoter Score,
okay.
as a survey within our organization to get constant feedback so that we know we're doing what we say we're doing, right? That's not just core values, are not just words on a wall.
And then, is that anonymous?
It is anonymous.
Okay.
Yeah, it's anonymous. And so people are able to give their feedback, both positive and constructively, of things that they'd like to see different. An example would be, you know, our benefits package wasn't necessarily as competitive as it could have been. And, you know, over the last couple of years, we've taken that feedback in terms of adding paternity leave, for example, to our benefit package. Adding, you know, extended length of time for even maternity leave. So, you know, little things like that, you know, when you're able to really listen to not only your customers, but we like to listen to we definitely listen to our employees as well.
Right.
To create that best place to work is, you know, those awards are some of the most coveted to us.
Awesome. Okay, so 2018. So this would be the 10-year for White Peach.
Cheers
Organic.
To 10 years.
Cheers to 10 years. So congratulations to that.
Thank you.
So my question for you, going back 2008 when you first started, what is something you would advise yourself maybe to do or maybe advise yourself to avoid?
So I guess to do, I would probably say initially, you wear a lot of hats when you are in a startup mode, right? You've got a lot of jobs to do and not a lot of money to hire people, so you just got to do a lot of things. And I think one of the things I wish we would have done better is to celebrate some of the small wins that we made along the way, because you just get so caught up in the grind of accomplishing something, and then you've got 10 more things that are on your list to accomplish,
right?
That you just move right to the next one, right? And I think that there we could have at least celebrated or recognized some of the things that we've accomplished, because, you know, after, you know, those first four years, and when we've taken two rounds of funding in during this 10-year period, one in 2010, a local angel group, Canal Partners, and then again in 2014 with a venture capital group out of Silicon Valley, top tier battery ventures. And up until about 2010, we were just grinding it out, right?
Okay.
I think after that, you got a little bit more resources to step back and say, okay, what are prioritization? What do we really need? And how can we better plan for things? And then we slowed down a little bit to be able to celebrate a little bit more. But, you know, it's always, you can always say things in retrospect.
Right.
But that's probably one of the things I wish we would have just taken time to, the proverbial smell the roses, a few more times during that period. And then something to avoid. I think it's important, even though that you're a founder or you know, as the leader, to not think you have to have all the answers. So initially, when you are the only one, you know, maybe you're a team of five or a team of two or three, you kind of have to have all the answers, right? Because you're the only one doing everything. But once you start to build a team, it's super important to make sure that you're empowering those around you to have the autonomy to be able to add value to the organization, right? You hired them for a reason. And not acting as that crutch for them to come to you with every answer. My answer always now is when someone comes to me with a question is like, well, what do you think?
Okay, you flip it on them.
You flip it on them because I want them to come to me with solutions, not just questions.
Right.
Or to have them have thought about it, right, in a way that was creative thinking, right, and critical thinking about how would I go about solving this issue. And the more times that you come back to them, if they say, I don't know, then it's like, okay, well, come back to me when you have a solution.
Okay.
Right? So it just helps to empower people to have input, right? Because some of the greatest solutions aren't going to come from my head because I only have the experience that I know,
right?
Right? And you have all the experience that you know. Collectively, now we have double the experience. And to me, that's how great sort of innovation starts, is when you have more diversity in your experience brought together and having the environment in which you have the freedom to express those ideas,
right?
And not just get shot down because it's not what the rest of the group thinks,
right?
I think is really important, and that is something I think anyone in a startup mode should avoid.
Okay, so you talked about having to wear different hats.
Mm-hmm.
You are an entrepreneur. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about being a woman entrepreneur in the tech field? So in a podcast, we 100% support women in tech. We support all culture, all diversity.
Sure.
But we also understand that there's challenges that everybody faces, including myself. Can you talk about some of the challenges you face from just being an entrepreneur in this field?
Yeah, so I'll even step back to being a physical therapist. So in physical therapy, the majority of therapists are women. So it's about a 60% to 40% split. But when you look in our niche where we focus on an outpatient private practice, the leadership or ownership of private practice clinics is actually about, is the flipped. it's actually about 75-25
Interesting.
In terms of men owning practices and not women. And so, and you know, this spans across a lot of industries where, you know, you rise, you look at what, you know, the top C-suites all look like and boards look like, and they're predominantly, the percentages are very high in terms of men.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that sort of quandary has been there for a long time. When we started WebPT, I was actually the only female, probably through the first, at least, well, I shouldn't say that. I would say full-time employees for probably the first 15 employees that we had, mainly because we were hiring people in technology.
Okay.
Which, as you know, there's not a whole lot of diversity in the tech field. Yes, I mean, I think it's definitely improving and it's growing and people are making concerted efforts to change that, which I think
agree.
Is fantastic.
Okay.
You know, I've been an athlete all my life. I was, as a physical therapist, I was a sports medicine specialist and working with professional athletes. And
what was
your sport? I played basketball in college.
Okay.
Yep. And multiple sports in high school, but ended up playing at UC Davis in Northern California.
Okay.
For my 4 years. And so working with professional athletes, I was oftentimes the only female in a room, right, of all of these guys. And so, I don't know, I've grown up having pretty thick skin through my professional career. So a lot of things don't bother me, or I know how to dish it right back, or to have the confidence and the aura, I guess, to not tolerate some of the shenanigans that can happen, right?
Right.
But again, this goes back to culture too, right? Of what kind of culture do you promote and what kind of behaviors you allow within your organization. And that's just was it was never tolerated, regardless if I was the only woman, right, in the group. And I think there's just kind of a line in the sand that you have to draw, and I've been fierce about drawing that line and sort of commanding respect and having that and promoting that same thing throughout the organization. Now we're in our organization here, even in our development team, our R&D team. We have a very good mix of diversity, which I'm super proud of in terms of our hiring. And it hasn't been necessarily specifically intentional. It's just how we think about things, right? Again, that cognitive diversity that I alluded to earlier versus just specifically diversity that most people think of in terms of, you know, your ethnicity or your gender. It's really spanning that scope even bigger.
Right.
And that's really how we think about things here in terms of diversity.
And I heard WebPT, so you mentioned culture. So I've heard you guys have a culture council. I heard there's like a Propel Her group.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so these are things that you're implementing within your own company, making sure people feel empowered to, like you said, do the things, come to you with solutions and things of that nature, right?
Yeah, super proud of the Propel Her group. That was started about 5 years ago. It started kind of out of the whole lean in from Sheryl Sandberg sort of push. We created a lean in circle here, but now it's evolved into what we're calling Propel Her, which even though it has the word her in it, we actually invite everybody in the organization, male or female, to join because we understand that change within, you know, understanding how to continue to promote or support and you know, elevate women in organizations is going to take both men's understanding of what the challenges are, as well as women's understanding what the challenges are.
Right.
And so it takes both sides to really, you know, make some different choices, make some changes within their mindset to create the ultimate change. What we're trying to have a more diverse, you know, C-level or leadership level in any organization. And so we're super proud of that. Our culture council is really, again, to make sure we have the voices represented of every department within our organization. Some of the fun things that we do, even with for every new employee, they go through a culture cruise. We think it's important for every person in the organization to understand how they fit in to the entire, you know, company and not just come in for that job that you do on a daily basis.
Right.
But how does your role as a developer, you know, how does that affect the customer, right? How does your role as a developer, you know, intertwine with what support our tech support is doing on a daily basis, or our marketing team is doing on a daily basis, right? And so, you know, part of our culture cruises, you go and you sit in every department, you get to sit on a sales demo, you get to see and meet the marketing team, right, before you actually even sit in the seat that you were hired for. And so our culture council is really representatives from all the different departments, and we get together and we talk about, hey, what are some things that are going on and cool events that we can put on to integrate all of the teams and really get more camaraderie spread throughout the organization as well. The other cool thing that we're doing is called the Member Moonwalk.
Oh, what is that?
So the Member Moonwalk is actually really kind of born out of sort of being a subject matter expert and having that product mindset of every person in the organization know who you're serving, know who your customer is.
Okay.
And so our goal is to get every employee out to either a physical therapy or occupational therapy or a speech language pathology practice, in which they can actually observe WebPT in action and talk to these therapists on how they're actually using the software, and how, you know, how does WebPT affect their daily work life. Understand the mission criticalness of our application, understand the trials and tribulations of what their day looks like in seeing patients, and how WebPT empowers them into doing what they need to do every day.
I think that's really cool. Really what you're talking about is going and seeing the actual people who use your software, figuring out what they're liking, what they're not liking, taking that feedback and going back in the lab and, you know, improving your product. So that's really cool. And
when you make that connection with the customer, it is such a driver to understand why you're doing what you're doing. And that, at the end of the day, is what we're trying to accomplish.
And then another thing I want to point out, you called it a culture cruise, which I really, really enjoy, because a lot of places you call it new hire orientation or your day one training. And, I mean, to me, that this off the my initial feeling that I hear that, I'm like, that sounds really boring. And culture cruise is like, am I going on a vacation? Like, which, again, like, you see YPT culture, so those are really cool things. Let's take it a step back. Talk about you being an entrepreneur, helping start a tech company, but you mentioned that you're in downtown Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people, when you hear about tech companies, they think of Silicon Valley, they think of a show Silicon Valley, they think you have to be up in NorCal with a whole bunch of money, and
mm-hmm.
but that's not necessarily the case. So, you know, what was your thought process? What are some, if there are challenges, or just overall thoughts of starting a tech company in Phoenix, which in my eyes is a up-and-coming tech hub?
It absolutely is, and it's been growing, actually. It's funny. I feel like we've been on that same timeline. The landscape and the environment here when we started back in 2008 was significantly different in terms of the mentorship available, the money that's been flowing into our area to help grow these new tech startups. Very, very different than when we started in 2008. And it's been great to watch, but it's also been great to pay it forward and be a part of the burgeoning sort of tech community that's really growing very, very quickly. And having the warehouse district where we are with Galvanize and, you know, other organizations that are around here, SeedSpot and a couple other ones that are really making a difference in terms of being an incubator and helping to educate and, you know, it just empower these startups to hopefully get to that next level.
Right.
So that's been great to watch. Arizona is in, has really made some big strides in the last, 5-8 years as well to help, promote the fact that we are becoming a tech hub. There are a lot of tax benefits and tax incentives that they've given to help tech companies, grow. There are, you know, the city of Phoenix, for example, for us, even just being down here in the warehouse district, they came and sat with us and said, hey, we know you're hiring a bunch of people. What can we do to help? How can we make this area, you know, be more inviting to even more companies to come down here? And so we gave them a whole list of things from, you know, better street lights to more parking to improving the railroad tracks, because the roads down here were pretty horrible to drive on.
Okay.
And within a very short period of time, we're talking a couple of years, we've checked off all of those things off the list. You know, and even the parking that we have, it's hard to find parking in downtown. Everyone who comes down here for a baseball game knows that.
Right.
But on our street, we're right at the corner of 5th Street and Grant. And on 5th Street, there used to be only parallel parking that was available. And so in order to increase the number of spots we got, they actually changed it to be like diagonal parking. And so it actually doubled the number of spots that we actually have. And they not only did they do that, but they didn't make it metered parking. So it's all free parking, which helps us, right, to continue
Definitely.
To attract people down here and obviously not change the cost that we have to you know, have people being employed at WebPT. So little things like that. I mean, we're big community advocates.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of, again, our sort of way we like to do things, that we think about, you know, not only our customers, our board, and our employees as the stakeholders within the business, but the community is a big part of that, and our vendors are a big part of that as well. And it's kind of the rising tide mentality. When everybody's doing well, you're doing well, you're even doing better.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And so helping to sort of promote the tech community, getting out to speak, mentoring different organizations, being part of different organizations that are helping these tech startups, you know, bring more Silicon Valley money into Phoenix.
Right.
All those things are just things we're happy to help with now that, you know, paying it forward to the next sort of generation of companies coming out.
Definitely. And one thing we kind of talked about, like, just in terms of, like, real estate, right? Like, Silicon Valley's gotten to a point where it's kind of, I don't want to say overcrowded, but it's very, very expensive to get up there. You might get a high salary up there, but you can't afford anything. Arizona being a more affordable state compared to California, in that case, that gives you an opportunity, like, to get space, be able to build up your company, more companies move in. If you do good, then we do good, and as a community, we do better.
Well, that's a great point, Caleb, because, you know, our universities in this state were more forward-thinking and seeing this potential of this sort of technology, or of technology being part of our overall fiscal plan for the state.
Right.
And so you've got ASU, you've got U of A, you've got Grand Canyon University, just in this sort of local area, that are pumping out computer science folks. We've got some people in the building right here doing a project with us from ASU. It's fantastic, right? But what we have to do better as a state and as a community is get the word out that there are a lot of opportunities, and the cost of living differential is so much better here.
Right.
That, you know, for years we've had what they call brain drain, right? So we have all these people being educated, but they leave to go to Silicon Valley, or they leave to go to Austin, or they leave to go to Salt Lake City, right? That are more well known for their technology sort of atmosphere. And so what we're helping to do now is to really, you know, promote more. And the mayor, you know, has even stepped in to really put an exclamation point on it, where he has actually named this area between 7th Street and 7th Ave, from about where we are here on Buckeye to, I think, I'm not sure if the north end has been designated yet, but somewhere around Thomas,
okay,
as the innovation district.
Okay.
Right? And so that's kind of it's really helping to promote, like, there's a lot of really cool shit happening down here, especially in technology. You've got Startup Week happening. You've got all these different, you know,
yeah,
organizations that are coming down and making sure that Phoenix is being hyped. Not even hype, but just promoted, and just to showcase what's already happening,
yeah,
right? So more people know. It's a destination for tech companies.
Right. Awesome. So, you know, we talked about being an entrepreneur, being a PT, being a leader. One thing I'm kind of curious to hear, Heidi, is, you know, you've gone from a PT. Well, actually, let's go back. You've gone from an athlete to a PT to a founder 10 years later. You're still doing a lot. Can you just kind of talk about that transition, like, you know, how you changed both professionally and personally over the last 10 years?
That's a loaded question. you know, you evolve as a person with every opportunity and, you know, things that comes in your path. You know, it's a journey. And I'm, my spirit animal is a chameleon.
Okay.
So I self-imposed, but I tend to really enjoy going into a new environment and figuring out how to blend in, right? How to assimilate, if you will, into really absorbing everything that's around me and having a good understanding so that I can fit in. And so that's what I did with sort of tech. That was a huge transition for me. You know, as an athlete, the reason I got into PT was because I injured my knee my junior year in college, and I was pre-med, and then I was like, oh my gosh, this therapist got me back to playing that year and the next year, and I never had to have surgery. I was like, oh my gosh, I have to do this, right?
Okay.
I want to do this for more people. And so I went on to physical therapy and achieved my goals of getting into sports medicine and doing just that. And when that transition into the potential for tech was at when I was at the top of my game as a physical therapist. So it actually sort of made sense for me to try something new.
Okay.
Even though that transition was super hard, but I think it was super hard because not only was I making the transition into this whole new tech and software world, which, you know, 10 years ago, if the word technology and Heidi Jananga weren't actually going to be in the same sentence. I would not consider myself tech savvy
right back
then. I've come a long way. But not only was that transition into away from this career that was really become my identity as a person and you know, professionally, but I also was becoming a mom. So I had my daughter Ava in 2011.
Okay.
Just as we had taken in that funding and started on the rocket ship of, you know, this hockey stick growth after that first round of funding. And so that transition from PT to software and becoming a mom all sort of happened around the same time. And that was hard because, you know, trying to figure out how you balance all of that. Is just it was not an easy thing because there was so much going on at the same time. So, you know, the way that I sort of finally was like able to accept leaving and I left practicing in 2011 after Ava was born too. So
okay.
From 2000 up until 2011, I was working full time in
right. The
business. And working full time at WebPT.
So a lot of changes came at you at once.
A lot of changes came at once, and so. The way I was able to reconcile over probably 6 to 8 month period of time was really to understand why did I want to become a physical therapist in the first place? Because I love to help people.
So your
right?
North Star?
My North Star of me as a human being,
okay.
Right? Of me as Heidi Jananga. And reflecting on that and understanding that this opportunity in WebPT was going to allow me to help even more people. It wasn't just my smaller circle of influence within my patient realm, right, that I was helping. But now I had the opportunity to help my profession, my colleagues, and all of the patients that they're helping. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely.
It was like that epiphany of thinking bigger.
Right.
Right, that I hadn't really, I mean, I'd done it slowly over time in each transition within my life, but this was just another one.
Right.
Right, and so, and now, I mean, we've completely disrupted the profession. We've completely changed how therapists think about documentation. Like we're affecting so many patients in the you know, soon to be world, but definitely in the U.S. today.
Right.
Yeah,
I heard you guys dominate like what's it like 30 to 40% or even more.
Yeah, we have about 35% market share.
That's amazing.
Within 10 years.
Yeah, that's some great progress.
Yeah.
Over 10 years.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was ripe for disruption, right? Just
right.
Like a lot of things in healthcare. So. My advice for anybody out there who is an entrepreneur and is a techie and wants to figure out which area you want to go in. Healthcare is so many things that you can disrupt.
Right. And then that brings up a point I want our listeners to at least consider. So for you, you had the PT knowledge. Brad had the developer knowledge. Really intersecting those two created WebPT. And
right.
I just want to make sure our listeners know, like, you might be good at X. If you combine them with Y, you might disrupt the world.
Yeah.
So I think that's really amazing. Now, last question I have for you. You talked about being a mother.
Yeah.
As long as I've known you, I've always thought of you as a leader, have all these awards, being the president, co-founder, doing 100 different things. But end of the day, you're a person, you're a mother, you have a child, like you said. How do you balance that out?
It's there is no work-life balance. There is just life. Right? So you take it as you go. And
okay.
how I look at it is... two ways. So when I leave work and I go home to my daughter, my phone is off, my attention is on her. So it's no longer, I always also think about it as quantity of time, like I had to spend more time with her. But I've come to recognize it's really about the quality of time, right, that I'm spending with her. So when I am with her, it is me and Ava time, right? And we are having fun, and I'm fully engaged in whatever we're doing, whether it's watching her play or do her gymnastics routines, or, you know, at her swimming meets, or at school with reading time, or whatever it is. Like, it's that time. And I've also prioritized my schedule, which I had the luxury of being able to do, prioritize events that I want to make sure that I don't miss. Like, things, reading time at school is on my calendar, and that's nothing else gets scheduled over that.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So it's high, they're high priorities that just don't get missed. So that's really the biggest one is quality versus quantity. And then it's more of a long-term view, right? So it's not, again, so much about, and I still have mommy guilt, don't get me wrong. This is very, you know, this is how I want it to be, but every day I struggle with this still. But
sure.
It's really around making sure, you know, that she feels loved and that she really, the balance comes over time. So there may be a week where, you know, I'm not spending as much time with her, but over that, you know, that next week, I'm going to spend a little bit more time. Does
right.
that make sense? So
right.
it's a very long-term view versus a short-term myopic view. So, and then the prioritization thing is nothing's going to trump Ava time on certain things,
right? And I feel like a lot of people have this misconception that, like, people in your position, whether you're leading a company, that you block out time, right? Like, you're saying, like, oh, 2 hours for my daughter, then 2 hours of myself, and 1 hour for email. But, like, it's not necessarily that approach. It's more of, like, this is what's priority, this is what I'm going to make a priority, and then really just go with what you have.
Well, I wouldn't say that so much. I live by my calendar, very
do
much
you?
So. I do.
Okay.
Now, obviously, there's gray areas in which I can figure out, you know, it have to be spontaneous on things. But in order for me to truly prioritize things, I do very much block out specific time for things that I know that I can schedule, right?
Okay. So would you have something, and maybe this is where I need to learn from you.
Yeah.
Is it more of like, hey, like, this is my busy time, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is time for me to do web PT stuff. This is my time to do maybe ASU stuff. Like, is it kind of like that? I'm just trying to imagine, because I know, like, for myself, I would like to be in a leadership role one day like that.
Yeah.
Curious, you know, how have you created your schedule to work for you?
It's more around blocking the time that is a priority. So, for example, I work out 3 days a week from 5:45 to 6:45 a.m.
Okay.
Right? So, and I know on the days before that, I need sleep, right? I don't do well if I don't sleep.
Okay.
And so I'm not one of those that can just run on 4 or 5 hours. Like, I need a good 6 to sometimes 8 hours of sleep. And I know that about myself, right? And so, you know, the days prior to that, I'm not going to schedule any late events that I'm going to do. And so, because I know I want to be in bed by a certain time, because priority for me is that workout. Because if my physical health is not going well and I don't have those outlets of stress, which working out for me and yoga for me is how I de-stress.
Okay.
I know my productivity and my interaction with my other things that I need to do is not going to be as good.
Okay.
Right? So a lot of self-reflection, this is learning over time, right? A lot of self-reflection and knowing who you are as a person, I think, is critical, especially as you move into leadership roles. So Ava time, there's reading time that she's got at her school a couple days a week. Like, it's on my calendar, and nothing, like I said, trumps that.
Okay.
Now, there are other areas, if, you know, that, you know, Thursday nights or something like that, that yes, if there's an event on Thursday night at ASU that I can attend, then I can attend, right? That's also your willingness to say no.
Okay.
Has to be part of your vocabulary.
Okay.
And that was really hard for me to understand early, because you just want to be a part of everything and you don't want to miss out. That whole FOMO thing, right? It's real.
Yeah, definitely.
And especially as you're growing as a business, you want to be networking, you want to be out there. But, you know, you got to say no. And that's where, you know, the family time really trumps other things. And you just got to live with FOMO.
Awesome. So we're coming to the end of the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Super happy that we were able to get you on. Do you have anything to say to the listeners? Any advice for not just women, but just listeners in general, whether they're trying to break into tech or trying to become an entrepreneur or anything in between?
Yeah. So first of all, any of those categories, like, it takes a lot of hard work and it's a grind, right? There is no easy button for to be an entrepreneur. There's no easy button for, you know, someone who's trying to get into a leadership role. I guess there would be a couple of things I would say. First, if you're moving into leadership, it's really about doing the job before you even get the job. So if you really want to, you know, move up into the world, like, be assertive in, first of all, letting people know that you want to be on a leadership track, because your managers and people around you need to be your promoter, need to be your supporter, right? You need to have mentors that are going to help you get into those roles. And so get it out there that you want to be on that track. And then seek out opportunities where you can actually learn and show off those potential skills that you might already have.
Okay.
Right? So you're actually doing some of the role of that next position that you want to do even before you get it. And don't be afraid to do that, right? Because now it's like, of course, this is going to be Caleb for that next position. He already knows half the job, or he's already doing half the job.
Okay.
Right? So you're like a shoo-in. And then as far as the from an entrepreneur's perspective, or even from a women's perspective, let's put it this way. One of the biggest obstacles that women have to getting into leadership is because they think that if they read a job description, there's 10 items that are on the list that need to be part of the, you know, the job role requirements, that they need to check off all 10 of the boxes before they're willing to apply.
Okay.
And men, on the other hand, if they have one or two of them, they're in. They're applying.
Right.
Right? And so one of the things that I learned over time was I was really fearful going in, moving into this tech role, and because I felt like I knew nothing about it. But when I looked at my skill sets that I had as a physical therapist, when I looked at the skill sets that I had as being a clinic director leading 50 people, all of those skill sets directly applied into this completely different industry immediately.
Okay.
Right? And I didn't recognize that at first. I'm like, oh my God, I'm so scared. What do I know about technology? What do I know about software? I know nothing. Right? But if you just take a step back and assess your skill set, right, and understand who you are as a person, and being able to immediately transfer all those, I was immediately able to then say, oh yeah, I feel more comfortable because I'm doing the things that I already know.
Right.
Right? And so don't be afraid, I guess, to go into a position that you may not feel you're fully qualified for, because you'll learn, right?
Right.
And I don't really like the whole fake it till you make it thing, but it's kind of that, because I don't believe in sort of faking it. I really believe, I think it's about having confidence in knowing the skill set you already have and being able to understand how to apply that to another role that may be different than what you're actually doing. Does
right.
that make sense?
It's like there's probably some fundamentals, like you're saying, that you probably have more boxes checked off than you realize. And
yeah.
I totally agree. I feel like men, including myself, like you see 10 positions and you're like, I hit 6 out of 10 before career growth, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So 100% agree.
And then the last one I'll give just from an entrepreneur's perspective is just to be patient. I think, you know, I'm a huge advocate for bootstrapping. I think too often people have an idea and they want to get money to make that idea happen rather than going for it and, you know, putting your own skin in the game and really pushing out, finding out what is the value of your organization. Like, are people willing to buy whatever your idea is? Like, you got to get away from being sort of the innovator and really becoming an entrepreneur is when you can sell the idea.
Right.
Right. And so being patient through that process, it's a grind. There's not a whole lot of overnight successes. I mean, people think we're an overnight success and it's been 10 years.
Right.
Right. And so, just be patient and have passion for what you do, because that passion is what's going to get you through those really tough times that you will have,
mm-hmm.
those pivots that you have to figure out how to get through, the days you can barely make payroll, all of those things. You have to sort of really believe and have passion for what you're doing.
Awesome. Well, again, thank you for being on the podcast, Heidi. Really happy to have you. And yeah, guys, this is a wrap. So,
thank you, Caleb. It's been awesome participating. And really thank you for having this opportunity to share my story.
Awesome. All right, guys, we are out. Peace.
Peace.